The information and opinions presented in this ARC Energy Ideas podcast are provided for informational purposes only and are subject to the disclaimer link in the show notes.
This is the ARC Energy Ideas podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Well, welcome everybody back from really an amazing summer for me in July and August. I had a staycation. I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. But Jackie, first of all, what did you find in your staycation in Alberta that stood out for you?
Well, maybe can I do two?
Okay.
There was two. Actually, this Dinosaur Provincial Park, which isn't where Terrell or Drumheller is, it's actually near Brooks.
Yeah, it was mandatory.
It was really a cool place. And I can't believe that, you know, I've been living here as long as I have and I hadn't been there. And another place, which is just near Longview, south of Calgary, called Chain Lakes, is a really cool place I'd never been.
So. I know, I've been there. And, you know, the beauty of that place is that there just isn't as many people that go there.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have, you know, announced it on the podcast. Everyone will come. But, you know, it's nice, clear water. I mean, it's not a very big lake, but if you have small kids and they just want to go in the water and it's nice and clear and it's so close to town and, and a really nice campsite there. So, yeah, actually, I enjoyed finding new places just in our backyard.
Well, for me, it wasn't new, but it was one of my favorite places in Alberta. My wife and I went to the opposite side of the province, to the Cypress Hills, which is, again, one of those undiscovered gems out there. Highly recommended. Elkwater Lake, Reeser Lake, and it actually extends over into the Saskatchewan side of the border, where we went and hadn't been for about a decade, but went down to Fort Walsh, which is really an amazing thing. I'm not going to say any more because it's a spoiler alert. But speaking of Saskatchewan, I think that's a nice segue into our special guest today, and that is the Honorable Bronwyn Eyre, Minister of Energy and Resources for Saskatchewan. She's also responsible for Sask Energy and Sask Water. So welcome, Minister Eyre.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, and thank you. It's great to have you on the podcast. First, I want to thank you for your leadership and public service. This is not an easy time. So thanks for taking some time to join our podcast.
My pleasure.
All right, so we're going to talk a lot today because there's a lot going on in Saskatchewan, so we're really excited to have you on board. We're going to talk a little bit about the oil market, including the impacts from COVID, but we're going to talk about some emerging energy opportunities in Saskatchewan. There's projects around hydrogen, helium, lithium. We're going to talk about uranium, which is not new, but those other ones are new. And we're going to talk about the work you're doing around small modular nuclear reactors and carbon capture and storage. So it's a long list.
Well, that is a full list of energy-related things. I think it goes all the way across the periodic table of elements for the chemistry geeks out there, I mean, from hydrogen all the way to uranium, from one end to the other. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, before we start, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Minister? What got you into politics and some of the reflections on your time in office?
Right. Well, I was always very keenly interested in the issues. I'd been a columnist, a radio broadcaster, and so I'd written and talked a lot about what was going on. And of course, Brad Wall was changing the face of Saskatchewan. It was on the move and building and open for business. So it was appealing to run for his government. And I was elected in 2016, appointed to Energy and Resources, I guess 3 years ago this coming February. Before that, I was Minister of Education, Advanced Education. So it was quite a change very quickly into the file. Of course, Bill C-69 and 48 came to loom large, and eventually I would address Senate committees on both those bills. Of course, we would lose both eventually, but they were good fights and important fights, and I would say a great populism, I guess one could call it, in the oil patch developed as a result of federal policies such as these. And there were the rallies and the protests we all remember, of course. But really that pro-oil and gas, anti-federal policy sentiment helped lead to the result we saw in the federal election last fall, certainly out here in Saskatchewan and Alberta, pretty definitive. And next challenge, of course, in the file came these last few months, just the perfect storm, as we all know, of COVID and the OPEC Plus market situation, a very intense time at the worst possible time for the sector. And of course, now we're beginning to see some stability return, cross fingers. My latest focus has been on the Clean Fuel Standard. I've written a letter to Minister O'Regan asking him to put a formal pause on the regulations, which we feel here in Saskatchewan are being pushed through without adequate data or adequate consultation, and they'll have a very negative stacking effect on the mining sector, as well as the oil and gas sector, and of course the consumer. But I would just say generally in terms of reflections on the file, and I was thinking about this on the weekend, I've put more of my old legal training to work than I did in previous files. There are a lot of regulations and bills and very technical issues, as you know, that come to bear. And last week I had a lengthy discussion with officials about how contractual a timber allocation was, and it reminded me of the old contract law 101 days. So, yeah. But it's been a great challenge and obviously very intense time, but very proud to be in the role.
Well, you know, we'll add one more topic to the list because the Clean Fuel Standard is something I'm sure not a lot of our listeners have heard about, but it is a policy that there's a new draft that was put out in July, and it's a federal government policy that aims to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions associated with different fuels. And there's targets about how much you have to reduce the intensity. So what are some of your big concerns associated with that?
Well, again, the data is a big one, you know, and just the amount of consultation. I mean, we feel in Saskatchewan that the data hasn't been updated to reflect the COVID reality, certainly even 2020, just across the board. A lot of the stakeholders that I talk to in Saskatchewan in mining and oil and gas feel that consultation hasn't been open enough, that often topics are given much too quickly before a meeting or much too soon before the meeting or consultation is to be held, and that there just hasn't been enough opportunity to really weigh in on the effects of all of this. And as I say, a very serious stacking risk with everything else that the sectors here have faced. And certainly after this very challenging time. So a lot of concerns about the data, a lot of concerns about the lack of consultation.
Let's talk about that data for a minute. So, I mean, as the name implies, Clean Fuel Standard means that some standard of, say, emissions and others as your oil from Saskatchewan changed through to the refinery all the way down to the consumer has to be met. But what you're suggesting is that the 500,000 barrels per day or so Saskatchewan produces from across the province, that there is really not timely current data from which to be able to apply the standard to?
And we have to be really careful that if we do start applying data to anything, that it's, you know, that there are apples to apples numbers that everyone is looking at and agreeing on. I think one of the concerns, of course, is that this could amount to a second carbon tax. And it is interesting why this isn't really on the radar. It is in a way, but not maybe in a broad sense, certainly on the part of consumers, which is unfortunate perhaps because it will have such an impact. I think it's partly our job to raise awareness about the effect of this, technical though it is, and benign sounding though it certainly sounds. I mean, Clean Fuel Standard, who doesn't want that? One of the biggest concerns we also have is that if this is put in place too quickly, the infrastructure that's needed, you know, in the clean fuel sector, they're just not ready. And so it will result in a massive amount of importing, particularly from the U.S. And so it will be, you know, of great benefit to the U.S., great benefit to American workers, but not very much to the Canadian sector. It were simply not ready infrastructurally. So that's also been another big concern. And again, just the economic, you know, crippling that this could cause at a really very difficult time for consumers and for our resource and energy sectors.
Well, thanks for bringing it to our attention. I think we should have a future podcast on it. I've been hearing more and more about it. But as you say, it's not high profile like the C69 or C48. And other concerns I've heard is that it's very narrow the ways you can comply. And therefore, it's going to make it very difficult to comply. And like you say, there'll be just a few pathways that maybe benefit biofuel suppliers that have the right type of biofuel.
Or foreign suppliers, as she said.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd be happy to talk about it anytime.
All right. Well, let's talk about the oil markets a little bit. And I think our listeners are probably aware, but Saskatchewan does produce 500,000 barrels a day. As Peter said, you have a heavy oil upgrader in Lloydminster. You have two refineries. So it's been a difficult time with COVID and, you know, prices, you were saying, it's feeling a bit more stable. We're at $40 now as opposed to, or a little above 40, as opposed to 20, which does feel a bit better, but it's still very difficult. You know, by our numbers, the activity levels in Western Canada are down about 70% compared to what they were the same time last year. So what's the situation like in Saskatchewan? And, you know, how are the small towns that depended on this oil field activity faring?
Right. Well, it's been a very difficult time, of course. And I did a lot of calls during COVID, a lot of virtual stakeholder roundtables. And I would ask MLAs to get people together from their local areas to talk about what they were facing. And some of those calls were pretty humbling. I mean, Saskatchewan people are pretty stoic and they don't want to complain and they don't want to ask for things. But during this time, there was a lot of pain. And that really came across, and obviously it had a big impact on a lot of smaller communities in the province. The oil sector, of course, as you know, has had a very positive effect and impact on a lot of communities. Companies have sponsored everything from rinks to choir programs, and companies hire summer students. You know, you name it, there's a huge trickle-down of activity when things are rolling. And as the sector goes, so go these communities. And when times are tough, it has an impact. It's definitely had an impact.
It's really concerning in terms of what's happening in the rural parts of Western Canada, because so much of the rural workforce is resource related. A lot of it is oil and gas.
Yeah.
In that regard, there's been a big push on diversification and diversification efforts going forward. And I'd like to get to that periodic table, the hydrogen, the helium, the lithium, all the way down to the uranium. Saskatchewan is an amazing province in terms also of its size. I mean, if you look at it, it's almost exactly the same amount of acreage as a country like France. And you're so full of resources, whether it's above ground or below ground. And so the pivoting to different types of resources is something I think is a huge opportunity. You've recognized it, and there's been a number of press releases and things that you've put forth. So, well, why don't we start with the first element on the periodic table, hydrogen, and take it from there. What are you thinking there?
Well, as you say, we have been making our way through the periodic table and announced projects around helium, around lithium, and as you say, hydrogen. The Premier also made an announcement last week about rare earths. So certainly we have been doing that. And on hydrogen, yes, I mean, first of its kind in the world, which is also what made it eligible for our Saskatchewan Petroleum Innovation Incentive, which is basically for R&D. It's an incentive that provides a 25% transferable royalty credit on projects such as this one that are considered new to Saskatchewan and obviously innovative. The hydrogen project is very promising. The plan is to extract emissions-free hydrogen from oil and gas reservoirs. Clearly, there's a lot of buzz about hydrogen at the moment, and as you say, very good for diversification in Saskatchewan. We were 32% dependent on oil and gas revenues some 7 or 8 years ago. Now it's somewhere closer to 10. Of course, oil and gas is still very important, you know, as an economic driver in the province, but these kinds of projects are also very important to look at as we have the resources in the ground here.
Well, and we had Proton Technologies on our podcast in November of 2019. If any of our listeners are interested to learn more details on their project in Saskatchewan, which aims to produce hydrogen from oil fields. I did want to ask you, because I noticed in many of your press releases, you do talk about your petroleum innovation incentive. So if I understand this correctly, a company can go sell the royalty credit and get cash for it. So it's a way for them to raise capital for their project. Is that right?
Right. So Proton, for example, would be able to monetize transferable royalty credits by selling them to any oil and gas producer in the province who's willing to buy them. And the province, you know, here we receive about $650 million annually in royalty payments. So the market potential, obviously, to sell credits is pretty significant. And I would just say, in terms of how that works and how the royalty credit system is set up, it's government money that follows. It doesn't lead. So only, you know, once a project is up and running does that 25% credit transfer, as in this case with the hydrogen project, actually flow.
Okay. But it is a way, it's kind of innovative. It's a way for them to get capital, which is difficult to get for some of these early stage projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And very well received. I've heard it explicitly from these companies, and including this one in terms of the hydrogen project. So that's obviously the goal, that you put in place something that companies can actually use.
Yeah, I mean, if we can turn oil and gas fields into hydrogen fields, or at least increasingly brand them as such, I think it would really go a long way. But let's go to element number two, helium. I mean, it's more than just a party gas for filling balloons and talking funny. It's not so much an energy-related element, but it's definitely a scarce resource in the world. I think the largest helium fields are in Texas, but you have a lot there, actually, in Saskatchewan, and had a program in the 60s and 70s to produce it. It was stalled. Where are you at now?
Yeah, my understanding is that helium production began in the 60s in Saskatchewan, and it was primarily driven by increasing prices resulting from federal programs in the states, and then in the early 1970s, the U.S. space program and some other initiatives were scaled back, and that, of course, reduced the demand for helium, and the price drop led to most of Saskatchewan's helium production being discontinued. I think the last operating facility was shut down in 77, somewhere in there. But of course, now that demand and prices for helium have begun to rise again, and this time we hope more sustainably, helium production is back. And again, with the largest helium purification operation in Canada that we announced construction starting in October of this year near Battle Creek in the southwest, and it's expected to be in service by July of next year. Obviously, more periodic table and more incentive. This one we're supporting through the oil and gas processing investment incentive, and that will provide a 15% transferable royalty credit on a value-added processing project such as this one. And our royalties here in Saskatchewan are, we feel, competitive at 4.25%. So any excess royalty credits that North American Helium, for example, would create could be, again, monetized by selling them to another oil and gas producer. So we hope that's of help and of use. It seems to be, because we have seven companies as of June of this year had acquired 123 permits, I think, 192 leases, 24 wells have been drilled or recompleted. So things are rolling there too.
And that's all with helium.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And we have good, environmental footprint for helium in Saskatchewan. I know outside Canada, it's usually extracted as a byproduct of methane production or of LNG. But here we have a competitive advantage because the geology can support the drilling of standalone helium wells. And so that, obviously they can produce a lot of helium, a lot of nitrogen, no negative emissions impacts associated with venting nitrogen. So again, we're very lucky in that regard that we have that geology in place.
Well, it's exciting, a new industry, and you'll soon be home to the largest helium purification operation in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, lithium. Let's move on to lithium. So in June of 2020, there was an announcement about a pilot project in Saskatchewan, and the plan is to produce lithium hydroxide from oil field brines. And so obviously this is really exciting because there's lots of projections for steep growth in the need for these minerals to support battery manufacturing. So tell us a bit about that project.
Right. Well, my understanding is that the companies here are seeking to extract and concentrate lithium from, as you say, brine water in a process of less than 6 hours. And that's in contrast to traditional lithium production, which mines it directly or uses large-scale evaporation ponds. And that process can take upwards of 24 months. So, really exciting innovation on this project. And I know over the past 10 years or so, the Saskatchewan Geological Survey has been really analyzing the brine waters in our oil fields. And it's found that lithium concentrations of up to 190 milligrams per liter of brine water, which means a ton, could be produced from about 33,000 barrels of water. And obviously concentrations vary across reservoirs, but I know last year Saskatchewan Oil and Gas Companies produced about 6.3 million barrels of water per day. So there is a lot of opportunity there. And as you say, I mean, global demand for lithium is obviously strong and forecast to grow, I think, by 10% per year between now and 2024 because of the expanding use of it in batteries in electric cars and portable electronic devices. So, you know, again, really exciting possibilities around that one too.
Well, let's go to the other end of the periodic table, number 238, which is uranium. And I don't think a lot of people know how large the production profile of Saskatchewan is in the world uranium scheme. I mean, Kazakhstan is the number one producer in the world and Canada's number two. But it's not really Canada, it's Saskatchewan that's the biggest producer within. So tell us the plans, what's the status of uranium these days, and what are your potentially even your sort of downstream plans in terms of potentially refining more and so on?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, Fukushima, I think it was in 2011, I guess, had a serious impact on prices. And there have certainly been peaks and valleys in terms of the uranium industry, which of course has a great impact, you know, here in Saskatchewan. But prices are getting better; they're more stable. And of course, with this talk about small modular reactors, they're dovetailing complements that will be good in, you know, for Saskatchewan. I know, according to the World Nuclear Association, there are currently 440 or so technically operable nuclear reactors globally. About 56 reactors under construction, over 400 more are planned or proposed. Mm-hmm. And so that's interesting. And right now, the vast majority of Saskatchewan's uranium is exported to the States and Asia and Europe. Certainly, though, the sector here is in a very good position to benefit from global growth in the nuclear market, especially with geopolitical shifts that we're seeing that are in play. And I think going forward, when there's new demand and prices are better, we hope Cameco, which is our big company here in Saskatchewan, will be in a better position to bring MacArthur River back online. That's the world's largest high-grade uranium deposit. And also with current operations and just the deposits we have at various levels of evaluation, we feel that Saskatchewan's very, very well positioned to meet those growing uranium demands. I know you speak about refining and so on. I know in the 80s, Saskatchewan decided against a uranium refinery. It was going to be built near Warman, which isn't far from Saskatoon, where I live. And instead, the refinery ended up being built in Ontario in Blind River and still in operation, as is the Port Hope conversion facility, which is also in Ontario. My understanding is that right now there just isn't enough demand for more conversion, more refining on the global market. I think the only conversion facility in the U.S. was shuttered back in 2017 or so. It was for a number of reasons, including oversupply of uranium hexafluoride. But as you know, as we've mentioned, we are part of this initiative now to move to small nuclear reactor electricity generation. So we'll see where the future leads us.
The small nuclear reactors require a certain kind of fuel and a certain kind of format. And, you know, maybe there's an opportunity there down the road to take the raw uranium all the way through to the fuel. And I guess on that note, you know, I'm wondering about Saskatchewan is such a resource rich across the periodic table. And, you know, what is your government's philosophy in terms of sort of like the whole value add argument? Like, rather than just bringing stuff out of the ground and shipping it raw across the country or across the continent around the world, to actually have more secondary and tertiary industries around these resources built up within the province?
Well, I think we've definitely seen that. I mean, when it comes to the processing side of things, even with the other projects that we've mentioned, I mean, the plan certainly is to move to that from some of the exploration development, you know, components that we're starting with. And so absolutely, where possible, You know, that's what we're trying to incentivize. Obviously, we have a number of programs across, you know, the economic development file that are looking to do that. I mean, as I say, with uranium, the economics aren't there so much for that part of the process, but on the other ones, on the lithium, on the helium, on the hydrogen, just for example, certainly that second processing phase is part of the plan and is part of these companies' plans. And so that's obviously what we're aiming for, is to put ourselves on the map that way with the whole chain, or as much of the chain as we can, be part of. Yeah.
I'd really like to see that. I mean, there's no, well, you know, I've often said in Canada, we're so resource rich because of provinces like Saskatchewan that, you know, why aren't we going all the way straight through to building a battery plant? Right? We just don't seem to get all the way to the end.
Yeah, part of it, of course, is capital,
sure.
Right?
And but other
that's
countries,
why I think these incentives are, yeah, oh, absolutely.
Other countries are doing it. Why wouldn't we?
Yeah. Well, that's the aim in some of the projects that we've talked about. And certainly, I mean, we feel and we hear that the incentives that we've put in place at the ground level help with some of those capital challenges,
yeah.
Right?
Well, there's no shortage of space to do it, so.
No, that's for sure. I was up in Madge Lake in the province over the weekend, and I thought overpopulation is not an issue here. It was a largely, completely undeveloped shore. Let's just put it that way. There was no one on the beach.
Didn't have to worry about your social distancing.
No.
Which was nice.
No, absolutely not.
So you are talking about value add. You are looking at small modular nuclear reactors. And we did have ARC Nuclear Canada on our podcast. So many of our listeners heard how these small modular nuclear reactors are quite different, and they have much lower cost and less safety and environmental risks than the big projects that we think of when we think of big nuclear reactors. Now, you have set up an office to help get these things going. You want the offices for developing and deploying these smaller reactors. So tell us a little about that, and also how long do you think it would be before we could actually see one of these reactors operating in Saskatchewan?
Right. Well, I mean, the whole SMR thing is being run under the umbrella of Sask Power and the Ministry of the Environment. And as you said, that we've announced that we'd be establishing this so-called nuclear secretariat, which is basically an office in the Ministry of Environment to look at nuclear policy under the climate change branch. And its job is to pull together a strategic plan for the deployment of these modular reactors. We think that SMRs could be an excellent opportunity to transition more of Sask Power's electricity production to this, you know, zero carbon reliable baseload power. It would also be a natural fit with Saskatchewan's uranium production, of course, which we've chatted about. So full steam ahead on it. This is, of course, new technology, and significant work is going to be required in terms of financing and regulation and labor capacity and public engagement, all those things. So to get these modular reactors operational is a bit of a process, and obviously, but we think that in Saskatchewan that will take until about 2032 is the date that I've heard to get these things up and running.
Yeah. But we haven't forgotten about the 500,000 barrels a day of resource that you produce in oil and gas. So what about carbon capture and storage? I know that you've actually been a leader in that already, and it's become more and more of a hot topic, the carbon, not only just carbon capture, but carbon capture use and storage. Can you give us a sense of where you're going with that?
Well, we continue to look at it, certainly. I mean, as other options emerge, I mean, CO2 capture at Boundary Dam has been technically successful. And since it came online in 2014, it's captured over 3 million tons of CO2. Of course, it was first out of the gate in terms of being fully integrated and full chain, so there are always challenges with that. But future capture facilities are certainly expected to improve on the cost of capture, and so it's a bit of an evolution that way. And we're also watching what Husky, for example, is doing with Inventus, with a lot of interest. But Saskatchewan has a large number of carbon dioxide point sources that would all be good candidates for capture and certainly for enhanced oil recovery projects that use CO2. Mm-hmm. We've had quite a few pilot tests of CO2 using enhanced oil recovery that build on our Weyburn and Mydale projects, and some are near field scale application. So things are, you know, obviously ongoing in that regard.
Do you think you've been given enough credit from environmental groups and even governments, others who look to us in the Western oil and gas producing provinces for really the leadership and what you've done with this carbon capture in places like Weyburn and Mydale?
Yeah, it's a tough sell, no doubt. And I guess sometimes a bit frustrating, because on CCS, I mean, I remain struck by the number of leading environmentalists who say that CCS and CCUS, utilization and storage, are the only ways to meet Paris targets.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it remains oddly off the radar, oddly off the federal radar. I mean, clearly the 45Q tax credit in the U.S. For these types of projects, it's been very successful. And I wish that our federal government would consider something similar.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I have raised. I think that the fundamental problem is that some people don't like oil very much. And they don't like Canadian oil. And so encouraging, you know, enhanced oil recovery, carbon capture and storage, for example, is something that they don't really want to foster because of that link. And I believe, you know, Minister Wilkinson in environment in the federal government has all but stated as much. And that's a problem, of course. But one can always hope, because it has yielded results. And as I say, is considered to be by a lot of countries in Europe, for example, a major component to meeting the targets we need to meet. So, yes, I wish it were given more credit for what it's achieved and for the innovation.
I just think blowing the horn a little louder on what's been done and almost associating carbon capture with Saskatchewan, given that you've been doing it for so many years and expanding the programs. I just think you've got to get out there more and tell the world about it.
We try, and I have tried in a number of ways. I know when students were protesting at the legislative building in Regina, you know, this was before COVID, I remember thinking how helpful it would be to just try to get that message out to them about what we are doing. I don't think people really know much about it, so we do have to do what we can. And as I say, I have raised it where I can and in the forums that I can. It's something tangible. Mm-hmm. That we're doing, and that's what's always being asked of governments.
Tangible and necessary.
Yeah. Minister, and I would
Absolutely.
Just add, you know, we've looked at quite a bit at it recently, and that U.S. policy, that 45Q, which basically guarantees a price for, I think, as long as 12 years associated with storing or using an enhanced oil recovery. We really need something like that. So unfortunately, the economics are very challenged here.
A price for CO2.
In Western Canada. Yeah, there's a carbon price, but it's not as certain as what the U.S. is giving, where they have a kind of a guaranteed rate of return. And the problem here in Canada, too, is, you know, who gets the credit? Maybe it's not all going to the person who's storing or using it for enhanced oil recovery. So I do think policy needs some tweaks here for this to really take off in Canada. So I encourage you to keep talking to the federal government and others, and I'll do that when I get the chance to explain the U.S. program versus ours.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think with that, we're running out of time. There's so much going on in Saskatchewan. We used up all our time. We really want to thank you for joining our podcast. It's just really exciting to see all the innovative projects and technologies that are moving forward in Saskatchewan. And many of these things with news that has been very recent, even since COVID. And we didn't even get to the rare earths one, but that's exciting that you have some opportunities there as well.
Well, we'll have to have you back. And as someone who was born in Saskatoon, I can say I'm really proud to have you on the show. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell someone else about us and rate us on the app that you listen to.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.